morning. Welcome to Dig in the Dirt. I'm Ann Goldin, and this week I'm pleased to have Karen Black and Christopher Padden here, and we're going to talk about food security, how you can get involved with information and beer, and permaculture. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning, Ann. How are
morning,
you doing?
Good morning, Ann.
I'm great. Well, if you don't know, I've been gone most of this week. I've been out in Brighton Bush communing with singing and nature, and it's been wonderful, and I'm rethinking my whole what I'm doing. I very much like being disconnected from the telephone and email and all that. So, and ate spectacular food that I didn't have to prepare. All wonderful organic.
What a wonderful treat.
Yes, it was a great treat. Okay, so let's talk about food security. What does that mean?
Food security, to me, is being able to grow enough food in our area to feed the people in our area.
So it's a local, it's a local concept.
It's another one of those local things, yes.
Uh-huh. Okay. and now when I think of food security, I think about a family being able to procure enough food and whenever they, you know, whenever they need to eat, mm-hmm. as opposed to mm-hmm. kids and families relying on schools to mm-hmm. supplement with breakfast and lunch.
Right.
And then when there's no school,
then they have a problem. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, course. it's another concept of food security.
It's another piece of feeding our own people with our own resources. And, mm-hmm. and,
well, some of the, I think this whole issue came about probably to people's attention during the storm of 2007. When we were basically cut off from, you know, any sort of resource replenishment from the outside, you know, from Portland, and we were dependent on trucks, by and large, here on the North Coast.
And the highways were blocked, and trucks didn't come in with food, and the food that came in was all packaged. It wasn't live mm-hmm. food.
Right, exactly.
The storm of 2007 has turned out to be a reality check in a lot of ways, and really has, I think, helped strengthen our communities by people being more prepared. So food security is just one of those ways. But yeah, that was a reality check or a wake-up call for a lot of people.
That we needed to have a lot more resources here, mm-hmm. not just in the event of a problem, but just why should we truck in something mm-hmm. that we could easily grow ourselves?
Well, as you know, and local food is usually much more nutritious. It doesn't get picked before the proper picking time in order to get it shipped here by the time it gets sort of ripe in the back of a truck somewhere. It's ripe and it's picked, and you know there's nothing that tastes like fresh picked ripe food mm-hmm. or fresh eggs or fresh, you know, produce, meat, whatever. It tastes different.
It does taste different. There's ample research showing that it has more nutritional value. But then the other aspect is we save resources in shipping as well.
Yes, we do. And that means we save money. We can feed ourselves more economically. Mm-hmm. We can boost our local economy. We can keep dollars here. We can keep work here for people. If we support people who are growing the food, if we grow some of our own food. Mm-hmm. So part of this whole piece of food security or picture of food security is knowing who your producers are. If you're not growing all your own food, well, who grows food here? Mm-hmm. And how can you connect with them through a CSA or directly, or, you know, how can you put people together? Even if it's something like, let's say you have a lot of apple trees in your backyard, and I have two peach trees or something like that. And so we trade because I have a lot of peaches and you have a lot of apples. So it's a matter of also gleaning in the fall. There are a lot of people who do gleaning around here, or a few people. It'd be great if there were more. You know, gleaning is, again, when people have fruit trees that they have in the past thought of as a littering problem, maybe, because
they have too many.
They have too many and they can't keep up with it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it just normally would go to waste, whereas if you get involved with other people that can come by at that time and glean whatever is left over, mm-hmm. you've solved a lot of problems.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. Because then you get rid of the attractants for pests. Mm-hmm. And also any diseases that may be in those.
Sure.
In those fruits, mm-hmm. they're gone, and then obviously it's food for someone else.
Mm-hmm.
I am amazed how many fruit trees in Astoria are never picked in the city on somebody's, you know, in someone's yard.
Yeah, it's and a that's great good project. Food going to waste. That doesn't necessarily have to be.
Now, in the past, there have been a lot of barriers to this whole process. Like, schools couldn't use local food because they didn't know how. It all had to be USDA and it had to be in a can. And
some of that is changing. There have been some inroads. I don't technically know, you know, which community has which laws in place or which school boards have which agreements with the USDA at the moment. But I know that throughout the country and including in Oregon, there are the laws are changing, and now students can grow food and actually eat the food they grow. The sad thing was that in the 90s, kids would grow food in a school garden, and they weren't allowed to eat it.
Talk about insanity.
Yeah, completely crazy. Right.
But that is changing, thank goodness.
That's good. Okay, now you mentioned CSA, and I'm sure there are people who don't know what CSA means.
Right. A community supported agriculture is what CSA stands for. And it means someone is growing something. It doesn't have to be a huge farm. It can be an acre, or it could be someone who has a backyard that they're growing a lot of lettuce in or whatever. But they are willing to sell or trade that lettuce with other people because they have more than they can use. Sometimes it is a full-fledged farm with acres and acres, and you know, it can vary in size. There are a couple of CSAs here in our
More
area.
Than a couple.
Good.
I think there are at least five
in
the lower Columbia, and they're everything from very, very small and fledgling to pretty substantial. Mm-hmm. And they all, how much it costs varies, and what you get varies, and it's all very fun and exciting. And it really gets to the heart of, if you know the person that grows your food, you know, you look them in the eye, you know it's going to be okay.
It's a win-win situation for both the producer and the consumer, because you eliminate the middleman. And you're dealing directly with the farmer.
Uh-huh.
You're helping him out economically, because it also helps eliminate the banker too. Because and having the farmer be beholden to a loan from the bank, he's actually getting that capital support up front before his season starts. So he's got capital to plant his seed and work.
Fix the combine or get the thing.
Yeah, exactly. His working capital comes up front right from the consumer. And by them purchasing a share in the in the CSA, so it's a win-win for on all sides.
Mm-hmm. Right,
it's
we should go over how that works. I think CSA, it's a share or it's just a membership or whatever you want to call it. But basically, you pay at the beginning of the season when the farmer buys the seed and plants, or when the person with a lot of lettuce in the backyard has bought the seed or needs to get the compost or whatever, you give them a little money to do that, or whatever you're trading to do that. And then as the crop comes in, they deliver it to you for a period of usually the entire summer or whatever, several months normally.
And there's an agreement.
And there's an agreement.
And generally, there's a signed contract. Mm-hmm. And your contract is you provide them whatever the money is, and their contract is they will provide you the food.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the delightful things with the CSA is you never know from week to week what it will be. And I remember last year that we, and there were recipes. Last year there was, we're going to have strawberries next week. And then I think deer got in and ate all the strawberries. Mm-hmm. And so we're so sorry, we can't deliver because the deer got there first.
And that brings us back to reality and local food and food security, which is what we don't think of until there's a storm or a problem, is that food is part of a natural cycle and things happen. we expect that the grocery store is going to have those, whatever it is that we want.
Every week.
And if we run out, we go and get more. We don't even know how much of things we use. I learned when we were first starting trying to be aware of our self-sufficiency or trying to become self-sufficient. I tried to become more aware of what I was using. How much, when do I have to because normally we think we're out of cheese, let's go to the market and get some. How long did it take to go through that pound of cheese or whatever? Mm-hmm. We really have no idea. Whereas once you start eating more local foods and dealing with the people who are producing them, you start paying attention to things like how long it takes you to go through food and what season it is and what's just happened. There's a storm. Okay, so crops. What was it? The comment that somebody made? I think it was your mom made the comment. I'm glad. Yeah, it's really, really hot and there's a big drought. I'm sure glad I'm not a farmer. Well, yeah, you're not the farmer, but you're eating what they produce.
Right.
In some ways, we're all the farmer.
Yes.
We're all connected. Without the farmer, we would be in sad shape.
With the advent of cheap petroleum, we've all been quite spoiled over the last 100 years, being able to get food from almost anywhere in the world rather cheaply. In fact, I think the food cost in the United States is some of the cheapest in the world. Not exactly the most nutritious, but...
Right, well, and the cost of food has actually gone down.
Mm-hmm.
I think we spend about 16% of our income on food, where even, I think in the 60s or 70s, we were spending $25.
Right, and Europe spends even a lot more... Mm-hmm. So, but on the average, the food on your plate travels about, 1,200 miles?
Yeah, 1,200, 1,500. They're different averages you hear from different people, but it's between 1,000 and 1,500 miles to get to your plate. And for every food calorie that you consume, 10 calories, heat, energy of petroleum have been used to produce that one calorie of food. So it's extremely inefficient system that we've had. We can save
and
petroleum.
It's obviously not sustainable.
Right. We can save oil that's now being spilled into the Gulf. Mm-hmm. We can save oil. We can prevent those kinds of disasters from happening again, and we can save our local economy. We can put people to work. We can connect people to each other in community. All of these things through food and food security by growing our own food locally, supporting people who are growing food locally, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, so... There's so many aspects to this. Let's talk about the information and what that's about. Obviously, you guys are involved with trying to bring people into awareness of this, and one of them is the information and beer.
Information and beer. People usually say, I'm interested in the latter part of it.
Right, give me the beer, and then I'll find out about the information.
Right. It's a program that started with Friends of Family Farmers in Portland. They have a lot of microbreweries, and it became extremely popular right away. They were overwhelmed the very first time they held one. They had some 200 people show up. So, and when it just is a chance for people who are growing things to talk with people who want to grow things or want to find somebody who's growing things so that they can
purchase
them. Mm-hmm. Yes. So it's a networking, connection making, and information sharing opportunity. And it's from 5:30 till 8:30, we're having one here in Astoria on June 24th, Thursday, June 24th. Starts at 5:30, goes till 8:30. You can come for whatever part of that you can manage. It's at Blue Scorcher Bakery here in town.
In Astoria.
In Astoria, yes. And the first hour or so will be networking and getting to know each other and talking with the farmers directly and so forth. And then there'll be some presentations or just some people speaking, and hopefully Ann, you'll be there to tell people that, yes, we can all learn how to make green thumbs out of black thumbs.
Absolutely.
And this one is about our topic is you wouldn't believe what you can grow on the North Coast.
And there's a lovely flyer that you might see around, and it's got somebody holding a handful of carrots that were just pulled out of the ground, and they look beautiful. They don't look like carrots I've ever grown here. In heavy clay, the carrots don't look like that. More amendments, I know. More amendments.
More amendments.
Break up that stuff. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk more. This is Digging the Dirt, and this is Ann Goldine, and I'm with Karen Black and Christopher Patton, and we're talking about sustainable gardening and food security. We'll be right back. Tolina, You're listening to Dig in the Dirt. We had a little excursion into South Africa. And I'm here with Karen Black and Christopher Patton. And we're talking about food security. And now, there's a term that people are talking about that I don't think very many people know what it means. And that is permaculture, which I hear perm. Okay, perm like permanent. And mm-hmm. culture is like growing. Or mm-hmm. So what's permaculture?
Well, the term was originally coined by a farmer, I guess you'd call him, Bill Mollison, and his partner, David Holmgren, in Australia. And they had spent a lot of time trying to studying natural systems mm-hmm. and looking at how can we increase our food production without going the standard industrial agriculture type of, heavy inputs from petroleum process.
And pesticides.
And pesticides uh-huh. and all this, you know. And they found that they were able to create a sort of like a forest garden approach that would produce a whole lot of food with a very limited amount of inputs as far as energy inputs, pesticide inputs and things like that.
So you're talking about chemical fertilizers and
right,
and the
exactly.
whole thing.
And they discovered that that the best way to achieve high efficiency in that kind of a structure is placement of all the different elements in your garden. And it was an integrated approach to how do you incorporate an orchard with your vegetable production and squash and berries and what have you into a whole integrated structure. So each element helps each other out, and almost every element has to have at least two purposes to support the other elements within the system.
So then it's not haphazard at all. It's very well planned out. So
yes.
If it doesn't work, then it's out.
Exactly.
Right. I think permaculture stands for, they coined the term from permanent agriculture,
uh-huh.
meaning that it was sustainable. You could continue doing it. It's also, the way I like to look at it is it's the lazier approach to gardening, so that you don't have to do quite as much work to get things to work. And the way you approach that is by working with nature. Instead of trying to control nature, you try to work with or manage nature. So you grow plants that are symbiotic, like corn and beans, or plants that one is a nitrogen fixer, the other one uses nitrogen. One is a pest repellent, the other one is the one that the pests like, but they work together well. Mm-hmm. Those are the more complicated features of it, and you can study it for a long, long time and keep coming up with new things to try. But basically, it's watching nature. How does nature do it? What works? And then using those techniques. There are very basic techniques that you can try, but to me the most important principle is that everything, as Christopher said, should have more than one purpose. So trying to think, okay, if I do this, I'm going to use it for the purpose that I intended, but can I use it for anything else? Making things very versatile.
So I'm thinking of, I'm growing a large a whole edge of sunflowers, and my goal, my other purpose, aside from these beautiful flowers and seeds for the mm-hmm. birds or for me, is I'm going to get some beans growing up those.
That's mm-hmm. an excellent example. Mm-hmm. Yeah, climbing beans are great, and sunflowers. Instead of hauling in wood and sticks and
right,
let the sunflowers do the work for
okay,
you.
Okay, well, I bought this really nice, it's kind of like an umbrella structure, this wooden thing for beans. Mm-hmm. And I put it in the middle of our community garden spot, and I planted all these beans around it. And then I thought, oh wait, I'm gonna get some zucchini to go on mm-hmm. that, and some cucumbers, mm-hmm. and then I'm gonna put sunflowers around it. But then the sunflowers that I wanted to pick, that I was attracted to, that the seeds I got, are smaller ones, so they're not gonna lend themselves to being that support.
But they'll do something else.
Well, and I don't know what else they'll do, but they'll probably...
You'll find it.
Well, they'll also attract bees.
Uh-huh.
Sure.
And that will be good.
And it's not just with food. Permaculture is a concept you can use in a lot of things you're doing. And so it applies to people, to your pets, to your animals, to everything. You can, for instance, you can plant flowers that are beautiful as flowers, but that are also medicinal or you know, just trying to be aware that things should have multiple purposes, that nature is about diversity and using things in numbers of different ways.
Well, all the herbs and spices have multiple uses.
Mm-hmm.
Another good example of the permaculture concept is integrating chickens into mm-hmm. your situation.
Chickens or ducks, or, you know, where the chickens till the soil for you in the spring and fertilize it, and then they go out and do their thing, and wherever you're keeping the chickens, and then the flowers or the vegetables grow during the year, and then the chickens come back in after harvest and till the soil up for you again and fertilize it again.
And of course, you get eggs and meat and feathers from the chickens.
And a lot of entertainment.
That's okay, cool. Now, for a person that lives in town, I've been trying to figure this out. I've seen these chicken tractors
mm-hmm.
where you just have two or three chickens
mm-hmm.
and
that's all you need.
On your lawn, they don't kill your lawn because you move it every
mm-hmm.
few days.
Right.
Well, I haven't quite figured out how to actually, I mean, the pre-made ones are very expensive.
Mm.
And I haven't been able to convince anyone at my house to take on that project. But is that really viable?
Yes.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, we've used a chicken tractor for
years.
And
yeah,
they're
a lot of fun.
They're terrific.
And you can make them out of anything, and you really can. You can also get a, I had one Christopher called the Jetson chicken tractor because I had taken apart a pet carrier, a dog kennel, basically one of the plastic ones that has a top and a bottom that fasten together with screws.
One of
the larger ones. And I'd taken it apart sideways and made it sort of like a camper shell thing, you know, and put a couple of pieces of chicken wire in between the two halves. And the chickens loved it, and I could move it all over. It was lightweight. And so you don't have to necessarily build something. You can use something that you find.
Oh, I might already have something.
You may already have something that you can, again, look at for a different purpose.
I like that. Well, we have no problems with saving things. The thing is, what do you do with it next?
Right.
You know, waiting for the purpose. So I have to rethink some of the things that we've got hanging around. Okay, now another so is there anything else on permaculture?
No, I just want to make sure we talk about seeds.
Good, that's yes.
Okay, was that where you
were
going?
That is exactly what I thought we should talk about.
After you've grown the harvest for the year, and I do want to encourage people to think that anyone can grow something. If I'm sitting here talking to you about growing things, believe me, anyone listening to this can grow something because I have the blackest thumb in the world. But, you know, you can cure that. That does go away.
Mm-hmm.
You can grow seeds. I mean, you can grow sprouts. You can sprout seeds on your windowsill in a jar with a cloth over the top of it, too. So your garden can be as small as a little windowsill, or it can be as large as you can make it. But in the fall, after the garden's done, the important thing to remember is to save the seeds. Let your plants bolt.
Well, and don't harvest everything. Leave a couple of plants to, seeds.
Right, depending on what it is. For instance, if you have bean stalks, you don't need to save a whole stalk. But, you know, you have a few nice, mature, you want to look for the good ones because you mm-hmm. want to select for good, hardy
mm-hmm. Exactly.
specimens, you know, good, hardy vegetables, fruits. You don't want the mealiest, crummiest apple. You want the best apple.
And you obviously want to use, open pollinated
hybrids.
Not the hybrids,
right,
because
so
they won't regrow to form.
Well, you just don't know what you're going to get.
Yeah.
For
right.
It's a surprise.
Right. So if you're growing zucchini, you don't need to let one zucchini go because almost all zucchinis we grow are hybrid. But mm-hmm. if you have an open pollinated variety, it's mm-hmm. cool. Now, sometimes it's fun to take a mm-hmm. seed of some pumpkin that's hybrid and see what happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, that happened to us with spaghetti squash. We saved the seeds, and the next time we grew them, we got
we sent them
a very
to
strange
his
squash.
Sister in Colorado, and she's calling all summer going, they're not the color of the picture that you sent. I don't think they're going to turn yellow. And they were the wrong color for a long time.
Yeah.
But they...
Did they taste good?
They were good.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. They still were able to use the recipe.
But were they spaghetti squash?
They didn't have the spaghetti texture at all.
I don't know what they were.
Like a fat zucchini.
Uh-huh. So it was probably going back to a more wild.
Right.
Yes.
It reverted back to something that it had come from. But uh-huh. whatever that was, they enjoyed it.
I on the idea that anyone can grow, my daughter lives in Anchorage now, and she... was moaning about crummy greens this winter, and I said, go out and buy a box, you know, a garden box, and get some soil and get some seeds. And she grew lettuce and broccoli and had some lovely chard and has been eating under a 4-foot fluorescent bulb in, you know, in the freezing of Anchorage all winter.
See, there you go. So if she can do that in Anchorage, just think what we can do here.
Where we don't have to do that. You right. can grow outside. I had chard all winter long. Mm-hmm. And I figured after that week of frozen, it would all be dead. But it wasn't.
I mean, it's pretty hardy.
The stuff that was there didn't look good at all. But the new stuff that came up when it warmed up, yeah, we've been eating that all year. And so you don't, yeah, I mean, you can leave carrots and different roots in the ground all winter and pull them out as you want to eat them.
Exactly.
And there's some even grains that do wonderful here. Besides, you know, potatoes are a no-brainer. No, potatoes are wonderful.
All root vegetables do
all
really
root vegetables do great. But I've been experimenting with barley and oats. And oats in particular are very good growing grain crop here.
Well, you think about it. This
anybody
is
wants
a lot
to experiment
like,
with that?
A lot like Scotland. The weather's a lot like Scotland, and
very
Scotland and oats
Scotland.
Are...
Oh, that would be fun.
Yeah, they're great.
Yeah, growing grain would be fun, especially one that doesn't have gluten in it. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is neat. All right, so let's wrap up with information. Thursday, June 24th, so that's in 3 weeks from this Thursday, from 5:30 to 8:30 at the Blue Scorcher. There is no cost. You can come. And so, like, next door it's going to be there with beer?
No, actually, Scorchers has beer.
Oh, okay.
They have it for sale. It's just, it's not the main thing that they do. So they will have some microbrew beers available.
So you can buy beer.
You can buy beer, and you can probably buy a vegetarian, what do I want to say? Not just vegetarian, but organic pizza or whatever to go with it.
So you can have, it's dinner time, so you can go there and have dinner. And
yes, you can.
And then learn about local food. Opportunities.
Connect with other people who are growing things or learn how to grow things, get encouragement and help in growing things, help maybe find a community garden plot to use or create a community garden with some people you meet there. Or, yes, we just want to put people together and get things growing.
That sounds good. Okay, so email, contact if people want to get in touch with you.
325-6886 is our phone number, and email, you can email me, us directly at lifeboatacademy@aol.com.
Great. Okay. And you can give us a call here at 325-0010 if you want to get more information.